You've been listening to an interview with Arthur Manuel, a spokesperson for the Indigenous Network of Environmental Indigenous Network of Economies and Trades. You can visit their website at indigenousnet.org. So now we're going to go into the news and announcements segment of the show.
All right, I've got some news here. While census data shows the number of Aboriginal people living in most urban centers doubled between 1981 and 2001, and in many cases more than tripled, funding for services to help them in transition to urban lifestyles has not kept pace. According to National Association and Friendship Centers, NAFC, the primary Aboriginal provider of programs and services to Aboriginals living in cities and towns, Aboriginal people living in urban centers face overwhelming problems and are rooted in cultural dislocation and powerlessness, discrimination, and poverty. Canada is creating a permanent underclass that needs specific services and interventions, yet nothing on the agenda specifically addresses these people. This is said Paus Tabadong, president of the NAFC. Today, 52% of Aboriginals live in cities. Friendship centers are recognized by local service agencies as important part of the final social safety net for urban Aboriginals who continue to struggle. In 2004, 116 centers assisted more than 750,000 individuals through 900 separate programs and services. For more information, please visit www.nafc.ca. Do consider supporting and volunteering at your local Native Friendship Center, because they can surely use your help, and there's no better way to connect with local Indigenous cultural and political networks. I will be making a small mention of this in just a bit. We just do have another piece here. Since 1970, Native Americans have gathered at noon on Coles Hill in Plymouth to commemorate the National Day of Mourning on the U.S. Thanksgiving holiday. Many Native Americans do not celebrate the arrival of the Pilgrims and other European settlers. Thanksgiving Day is a reminder of the genocide of millions of Native people and the theft of Native lands. And of course, the relentless assault on Native culture. Participants in the National Day of Mourning honor Native ancestors and the struggles of Native peoples to survive today. It is a day of remembrance and spiritual connection, as well as a protest of the racism and oppression which Native Americans continue to experience. This is the 36th National Day of Mourning, and Day of Mourning to our brother, Native political prisoner Leonard Pilcher. And your voice to the millions of worldwide who demand his freedom, help us in our struggle to create a true awareness of Native peoples and demonstrate Native and non-Native unity. Help shatter the untrue glass image of the Pilgrims and the unjust system based on racism, sexism, and homophobia. For more information, visit the website http://home.earthlink.net/UAINENDOM. And right now, Shelley's going to come up with some more news items.
The Native Women's Association of Canada has finally received its long-awaited arrival of funds for the Sisters in Spirit campaign. The Native Women's Association launched the National Sisters in Spirit campaign in March 2004 to raise awareness of the alarmingly high rates of violence against Aboriginal women in Canada. It is estimated that there are 500 Aboriginal women who are missing or have been murdered in this country. Beverly Jacobs, president of the Native Women's Association, states, "We see this as a defining moment, which marks an important step forward for the Aboriginal women in Canada. At the same time, we recognize that much more systemic solutions might be sought." Ms. Jacobs is pleased that the campaign will allow the Native Women's Association to begin to find these solutions aimed at reducing racialized, sexualized violence facing Aboriginal women. "Resolving this issue will improve the human rights record of Canada, which has fallen short in protecting some of the most vulnerable groups in Canadian society, Aboriginal women and their families. President Jacobs will be urging all governments to make violence against women a high priority, including the underlying socioeconomic conditions that make Aboriginal women vulnerable to violence. Native Women's Association will continue advocating for policy and legislative reforms in the areas of health, education, economic opportunities, housing, and self-determination. For more information, you can visit their website at www.sistersinspirit.ca.
Another story that we've been following. This article is from the Indian Country Today and is found. You can visit their website for this story. It's their website is www.insight_national.org. It's a biweekly newsletter of Insight Women of Color Against Violence. A killing ground became a sacred space as communities along Highway 16 gathered recently to celebrate the lives and deplore the deaths of disappearances of 32 women and girls, 31 of them Native. This happened during the 1990s. These largely uninvestigated, unsolved crimes took place on a 500-mile stretch of the road that threads its way through the lush rainforest and glorious mountains of Western Canada. The route eventually became known as the Highway of Tears, more of a place of horror than one of beauty. Kathy Weasley, Nisega Nation, a counselor at Kasan House, a social services organization and women's shelter in Terrace, British Columbia, coordinated the event called Take Back the Highway. The idea was inspired by Take Back the Night, an international demonstration against sexism and violence that takes place each September. In each of the many towns along the route, hundreds of men, women, and children, natives and non-natives, prayed, sang, and danced. They also marched. A butterfly suggestion became a tidal wave, said Granian Barth of Hope Haven Transition House, a women's shelter in Prince Rupert. Now, those who had experienced repression, sexism, and violence spoke of feeling empowered. Participant Sherry Laurier recalled her impression of the day. Walking along that path was so symbolic for me. It was like taking it back. Words cannot explain what I felt while walking with all of you courageous women, so I will simply say thank you. And now this, of course, came from Native American Times. That's Native American Times. Came from Insight /national.org or _.org. And I do have another news piece from Cornwall, Ontario, Canada's standard freeholder newspaper. Cornwall will be the new home of the RCMP's long-planned regional headquarters. For 10 years, Mounties have been planning to have a regional RCMP headquarters in Cornwall. Although the cost of the project is not known, it is understood to be around $15 million. But that number is hardly concrete, and because the project is still in the design stage and if all security features are added, the cost of the facility could jump drastically. There are many articles discussing this new facility, but none have mentioned the close proximity of Cornwall to the Gunaghaka community of Akwesasne, and which has long been the most heavily policed one of the most heavily policed communities in either the U.S. or Canada, which is, how peculiar.
Cessna Jenna, how hard and then the Kaja, I'll say that the law, I'll say that the law. Says na jene, diye kotil sawa, diye kotil sawa, diye kotil sawa, diye kotil sawa. Says na jene, saud zin sala, saud zin sala, hojo zin sala, hojo zin sala. Says na jene, ya he Says na jene, ya he yo. Says na jene, ha ha de, nen ka je, el se da tetla,
All right, we're back. So, Dan, what do you got for us?
Well, just a few more pieces that were culled from the Cultural Survival website. We use them very frequently, and I do recommend it for regular updates about news of and pertaining to indigenous peoples all over the world. Their website is probably culturalsurvival.org or com or something like that. If you search for cultural survival, you'll find it. So the first piece was compiled from the website's all.africa.com and anuakjustice.org. That's A-N-U-A-K, justice.org. The North American-based Anuak Justice Council, the AJC, issued a statement on November 4th condemning the recent violence in Gambela that resulted in the deaths of five policemen, including the state police commissioner. In the statement, the AJC said that it was not surprised by the violence and blamed the Ethiopian government for brutalizing the Anuak people and ignoring their enduring frustration in regard to the 2003 state-sponsored massacre that left over 400 Anuak dead. On October 30th, a group of armed Anuak took over the Gambela police station and released the 63 prisoners being held. The group then attempted a takeover of Gambela prison, but was unsuccessful in releasing the thousands of prisoners detained there. The two incidents resulted in 16 deaths, including 12 Anuak. According to the statement by the AJC, the group left a note explaining that they were not an organized rebel movement, but were simply people who had become too frustrated with the current Ethiopian government. It's quoted as saying, "For the last 2 years, the families of those who have had our loved ones taken away have never slept or known what it was to be happy. Every time we try to forget, we are shaken by another killing or arrest. It is very painful for us." End quote. The armed group allegedly targeted the police station because it was regarded as a symbol of Ethiopian government authority. For more information, visit their website, anuakjustice.org. The next piece comes from Nigeria. The wasteful and environmentally degrading practice of flaring excess natural gas has been deemed a violation of the rights to life, health, and dignity of the people living in the Niger Delta, the IPS news agency reports. There was a ruling on November 14th in favor of the Iwerkan community, which filed a lawsuit in 2004 against co-defendants Shell and the Nigerian National Petroleum Company to stop the harmful practice. The ruling will affect all communities in the Niger Delta, including the Ogoni and the Ijaw. Routine flaring, or burning, of natural gas was first outlawed in Nigeria in 1984. In 2001, the African Commission on Human and People's Rights ordered the government to compensate the Ogoni people for the abuse of their lands, housing, and health caused by the oil and gas production, which included flaring. The commission also required the government of Nigeria to undertake a massive cleanup of lands and rivers in the Niger Delta. However, no compensation was ever offered, and there was no environmental cleanup. Because of the recent ruling, residents of the Delta may now be able to sue the multinational oil companies and the government. This comes from IRIN News and the IPS News Agency. And the final piece of news comes from Occupied Japan. Representatives of the Ainu Nation, an indigenous group in northern Japan, issued a joint statement on November 14th, to the Japanese Foreign Ministry and the Russian Embassy in Tokyo, claiming territorial rights to the South Kuril Islands and demanding that Japan and Russia cease talks of governmental ownership, according to MossNews.com. Ownership of the South Kuril Islands, known in Japan as the Northern Territories and in Russia as the Southern Kurils, has been disputed since the islands were annexed from Japan by the former Soviet Union in World War II. Moss News reports that the long-standing dispute has prevented Japan and Russia from signing a peace treaty that would formally end hostilities between the two nations. President Vladimir Putin and Prime Minister Junichiro Koizumi are scheduled to meet from November 20th to 22nd to negotiate control of the islands. The Ainu explained in their statement that the four Kuril Islands belong neither to Japan nor to Russia, and that the Ainu have inhabited the territory since time immemorial, according to Itar-Tass News Agency. The Ainu have asked that they be granted free access to the islands and hope to make them an autonomous area of the Ainu Nation in the future. This comes from Itar-Tass News Agency and MossNews.com. And that does it for Native Solidarity News today. Do check us out next week. If you'd like to reach us by phone, you can call 514-398-6788 or email us at nsn@ckut.ca. We're always welcoming suggestions, comments, feedback, or if you'd like to get involved in the production of the show, or more information on any of the topics discussed here, do please get in touch.